Hello, guys, and welcome back to the Roots Away podcast. I'm your host, Jason Ringenberg. Welcome to season two of the Roots Away podcast after a very long hiatus. I took a lot of time to myself. I took almost the whole summer off. I backpacked 500 miles, mostly by myself, and I did a 270-mile bikepacking trip with my friend Megan. It was super fun. And in between that, just a lot of traveling. And one thing I did do this year is I went to Burning Man for my third time, and I actually got to volunteer with the organization and felt a little bit more involved. So because of that, our first guest for season two is John Halcyon Stin. John is probably the most known internet creator of the Burning Man topic. I'm sure if you looked up Burning Man on YouTube, he would be one of the first people you see. We talk a lot about his influences in his daily life that he takes from Burning Man, and he tries to explain Burning Man to all of us very, very articulately, and he's been doing it for a very long time. So without further ado, here is my conversation with John Stin. Hi, John. How's it going?
Fantastic. Good to see you.
Now, do you go by John or Halcyon mostly?
I think day to day, most people call me John. I certainly answer to both. And I think both of them welcome different aspects of my personality. But on the day to day, most people call me John.
Nice. And can you give us a little background, who you are, what you do? Just, you know, so we know a little bit more about you to just start off.
Sure. I love getting fuddled up in that question of what do you do? I call myself a love ambassador. I have been very impacted by Burning Man and the 10 Principles. And so most of the things that I do are impacted by that in some way. I do a lot of live broadcasts. I do three times a day. I do things live online. I do a 9 a.m. Love Ambassador broadcast, kind of inviting people to step into their best versions of themselves every day at 9. And then I do gratitude circles in Zoom twice a day. And then I do coaching and speaking, all related to gratitude and radical self-expression, and often working with people that have, you know, had a peak experience of some sort through a Burning Man visit or a psychedelic experience, or just really having some peek into a version of themselves that feels more authentic, and then are trying to be that person on a daily basis. And that can be very difficult when you don't have a culture and a world and a community that is encouraging that. So I do a lot of work with people with trying to develop and grow into the best version of yourself.
Yeah, that's quite interesting. Yeah. While you were saying that, I was thinking about my experiences with psychedelics and with Burning Man. And yeah, you find yourself getting to like the best, most authentic version of yourself, and everything seems to just melt away, and then you like become this like lovely being. I would
say,
like there's something about Burning Man that just lets you let go of everything and just like melt all down, and then you just become really authentic and loving, and like all of your fears sort of melt away, and like how you want to present yourself, and you just get to be authentic. I don't know. It's very hard to explain, but I know what you mean.
I think a big part of it though is the community of support. And I don't think we realize how impacted we are by the culture that we grow up in and that we're around. And so there's so much of what our day-to-day lives are, what we care about, what we're worried about, what we think people are thinking about us, that are just, it's just a part of the world we live in. It's kind of like there's the, you know, asking a fish, you know, what's the impact of the water on you? And they're like, what's water? You know, like that, yeah. that we just don't know how much is there until you have an experience, for example, at Burning Man, where it's a culture there that is governed by entirely different rules. And you really feel the difference of when you're in a place where, for example, there's no transactional interactions. You know, we talk about that one of the principles at Burning Man is gifting, which I think is way more revolutionary than it initially seems. You know, even when you first hear gifting, most people assume that it means bartering. You know, there's no money, so you trade stuff. But when you trade things, that's still a transactional interaction. You're still having, I have a value of one, you have a value of one. If we plus one, minus one, the ledger will be zero. And almost our entire lives, we are living in a transactional world where we're trying to keep the ledger at zero. And that has an impact on us that is very hard to know until you get a break from it. Because there's certain things that we don't value in this world. You know, if you have creativity, for example, that you can't sell, it has no value in a transactional world where the only metric is money. And then when you start to hang out in Burning Man, where it's non-transactional, and there's all sorts of metrics, like how cool is your art? How friendly are you? How good a listener are you? And all these new metrics that you start to value that are outside of a transactional world, it changes all the pressures that you put on yourself. It changes all the things that you're paying attention to. And I think it's in that shift of your focus from the grooves of that you've been in your whole life into kind of no grooves. That's that liberation place that of whoa, here's my authentic self when it's not being confined by all these rules that I didn't even realize were rules.
Yeah, I think about that a lot. I think about that the principles are designed in such a way that it takes away any distractions from like the outside world and really just lets you focus on human connection and focus on how you show up authentically. Yeah. It just takes away everything.
Because, you know, one of the principles is radical self-expression. And so I think you very quickly notice when you are doing something because you think it looks cool versus something that you're doing because it feels right to you. And that is not so easy to discern, I think, in your day-to-day living. And I think for me, most of my life, I was trying to be cool. I was trying to do the things that would avoid me getting teased or avoid judgment. And so to go to a place where there's a celebration of everything authentic, even if it's not what you like, you know, it's like, I'm not going to join you, but I'll hold your coat while you do it. And that kind of vibe of if you are expressing yourself in a genuine way, I have respect for that, is so much different than a world where if you kind of do something weird, most of the world or our culture has been subconsciously trained to be enforcers of the status quo. So if you do something weird, people will like roll their eyes and go, oh, or gosh, I can't believe she's wearing that. You know, all these little things that we don't even know we're doing. And then you get to a Burning Man environment, or there's all sorts of cultural hubs where people are supportive in that way. But anytime you're around people that are like celebrating your authenticity, it's liberating.
Yeah, very much so. Yeah, and I was on a like 250-mile bike ride around Northern California recently and stopped in this little cool town called Taylorsville and met up with a burner who was on the DPW about 10 years ago. And, you know, he was wearing a Black Rock City shirt and I was like, oh, what's up? And we ended up talking for like a couple hours and he said something to me that was like pretty profound. He was like, you know, explaining Burning Man to somebody that's never been is like explaining the color blue to a blind man.
Yeah.
There's just no way that you can really understand what's going on there unless you've been. And then when you're there, you're like, oh, I get it. Like, this is awesome.
So I recognize that. At the same time, I also, you know, have to admit that I have spent a huge amount of energy over the last 20 5 years trying to explain Burning Man and trying to teach people about Burning Man and trying to make videos explaining the principles and the culture. And the way I look at it is a little different than Blue. It's kind of like trying to describe the Grand Canyon to somebody who's never been, where amount of pictures or no amount of verbal explanation is going to be anything like the Grand Canyon. But if you understand the geology and you understand like what time of day the sun sets and you understand where the trails are, you can absolutely appreciate the Grand Canyon more and you can get a more deeper experience and you can have a more intimate relation to it quicker. So I think it's still valuable to talk about Burning Man and still there is still like you can talk about the map so that then when people get to the territory, it's still helpful. Mm-hmm. So, but I think that you're totally right easier than talking about what Burning Man is the impact that it has on you, you know, or the things that you saw that inspired you, things, the ways that you felt you were given permission. I think you mentioned, like, I've heard Burning Man referred to as a permission engine, which I really love that idea of it doesn't push you in any direction, but if you have any impulse, you have permission to go that way. And as opposed to a kind of a should, what should I do? What should I do? What should I do? Most of our lives, there's this like, there's no answer to what you should do. There's more of this permission to do what you want to do. And that feeling can make way to all sorts of stuff. And it's one of the reasons why I think it's dangerous to put any sort of rules on Burning Man, because I think that the real magic is in total freedom of expression. If you start to say like, well, that art burns too much fuel, like there's a very much pro-environment pressure. Let's try to avoid using too much generators and things like that, which I think is a beautiful idea to float. But if you start pressuring people to say this kind of art or this kind of expression is good or bad or has different kind of values, you start to constrict the freedom of expression itself. And I think that one of the huge gifts is like, what if I have an idea that a few people think is offensive? If you worried about doing it wrong, you're worried about the shoulds, you start to constrict the pipeline to powerful inspiration. And I think Burning Man really says like, let it out, let it out, let it out.
Yeah, I'm definitely more on the side of let it out than than regulating it at all. And you've been going for what, 22, 23 years?
26.
26 years. Okay. More than I thought.
All right. 25, 26. It's, it gets very blurry, but it's been, I think 98 was my first year and I haven't missed. The first COVID year, I did not go to Black Rock Desert. I did online and I also did a porch camp when I set up a whole Burning Man theme camp in my front porch that we served ice cream to neighbors during COVID.
Yeah. So I was 4 years old when you first went to Burning Man. So how was it back then versus now? What's changed?
There's lots that has changed and there's lots that has stayed the same. So I guess first I'll say the things that have changed is, it is much more of an established event and it has far more structure to it now because it has to, you know, it used to be fairly lawless. There was, you know, you might see a law enforcement occasionally, but there wasn't the eye on the community. There wasn't so much concern about what do people think. Most people that were going in those days, it was a friend of a friend that told you about it. So there was a much better, I think, acculturation system of expectation. Very few people, there's no way to like see a picture of something cool on the internet and then go to Burning Man. You really, someone had to bring you in. And so as it's become bigger, they've needed much more structures. And it's kind of amazing that knowing that it needs structure, it still maintains so much of the magic. The other thing that as it got bigger and more amazing, I mean, when you have a reputation for being the coolest thing that's happening on the earth, it attracts people. And in 2011 was the first time that it sold out. And that changed the event, because it used to be, if you heard about it, you could go. You could buy a ticket at the gate. And then once it started to sell out and it became, there's scarcity and this kind of idea of one of the principles of being, you know, radical inclusion. But after 2011, everybody couldn't go. And with scarcity, all sorts of new problems started to come in. And if you have a reputation for being the coolest thing in the world, then people who have all the resources in the world say, well, I want to go. Regardless of what the culture is like, with my billions of dollars, I'm going to come in and there's an energy that I bring when I bring that kind of resources. So the quality of art started to grow. The money that started going to the theme camp started to grow. And there's been some shifts because of that. Now, what hasn't changed? I'll say that because of that, what's amazing is even though all that's happened, you still have the same incredible landscape of mind-blowing stuff. And you have this incredible experience of seeing thousands of artistic expressions that is being done, not because they're being financially rewarded, but because they want to blow your mind. And seeing that much hours of labor and energy and passion that is totally outside of that transactional world that we're growing up in, that they did it because they want you to go, whoa, that impact on your brain, I think it can pop you out of some grooves of like, oh my gosh, there are ways that people are living. There are metrics that people are aligning their lives with that I have not even been considering. And I could probably be a lot more happy if I started to care more about that than my bank account, the size of my house, how cool my jet skis are, and things like that.
Yeah. I mean, you know, this last one's my third burn. And every single time I like roll up to a new art piece, you can find like not only is it mind blowing, but then you really like look into the details of it and you're like, oh, it's made of butterflies. Or, oh, how would you even begin to think about the materials to create this thing? Like how many people did this take? How much effort and money and just for the love of it? It blows my mind. It's every single time.
It's really amazing. And that's something that I think that, you know, just like so many things in the world, you know, with especially with the internet, like so many aspects of artistic expression, they're kind of are exponentially getting more complicated and more amazing, because instead of like when people come up with some crazy new dance move on the other side of the world, people everywhere in the world learn about it quickly, and then they build on it and they build on it. And so the art that you have at Burning Man now is using, you know, computer cut metal, and it's got lights and it's got music that goes with it, and it's got sound effects and it's got interactivity and it's got like, whoa. And there was in the early days of Burning Man, I think a lot of the art was, it was a lot of junkyard art. Like people would take scraps of crap and mel weld it together and throw things on it. And it was, there was a little bit more of a feeling of like, whoa, I can do that. Oh my gosh, I could do that. A lot of the art now is at a level where I do not look at it and go, I could do that. I go, holy shit, how many millions of dollars and numbers of people did it take to do that? Which is a different kind of blowing your mind. But I also think that Burning Man needs to hold tight to the part of its culture and its roots of reminding people that we're all artists and you can make art.
Yeah. Yeah, no. I mean, it does look sort of unapproachable for like any normal human to make like a good art piece that's out on play nowadays. You know,
yeah.
I've seen a couple that may have been made by like not using computer lasers and things like that. But
have you been to any regional events?
No, I've just been to the big ones.
So that's a thing that I think is as a part of the Burning Man culture and community that is really important. I just went to the San Diego local one, Utopia, for a brief visit, and that's there's a lot of overlap with early Burning Man days. Then so if you're like, man, Burning Man's too big now, I wish I could have gone when it was, you know, it was smaller. Like, well, you should check out the regionals. They are, it's the exact same principles, the exact same culture, except with a smaller number of people and less resources. And so there are people that are making cool art out of the things that they're in their backyard or the things that they dragged up the side of the road, as well as impressive art too. But it feels, I think you, at a regional, you absolutely have the feeling of like, oh, I could do that. Oh, next time I'm going to build this. You know, and because it's smaller, you also have, like, at Burning Man, it's so amazing. Like, you can put your whole year into a piece of art and have the majority of burners not see it.
Yeah, totally.
But at a regional, like, if you make something amazing and you put a lot of energy into it, you're going to impact the entire event, which is kind of they're two different, I think, paths of cool expression, but both available.
Yeah, I think I'd be more interested in like performance art of some sort, or like a theme camp that's like more unique or something. That's like, I'm not like very good at creating art, but I'm good at like making people laugh with like stupid ideas. So
I love that. I was just talking with that it feels like that's I think my favorite part of Burning Man is like the individual expressions of silliness and wackiness and absurdity and like improvising in the middle of nowhere, or someone walks up to you and they are in character and they do something crazy. And I think it has less visibility now because there's so much big, incredible, loud, wild things. But to me, a huge part of what makes Burning Man magic is the individual jesters and jokers and people like you that are making people laugh and just keeping the surrealness to everything.
Yeah, and I mean, you can make it like just as silly as you want. You can make it as elaborate as you want, and like that's what I love about it is like the like weird pranking that goes on, sort of thing. Like somebody has just devised like something insane, and you just like stumble on it, and then you like don't understand what they're doing, and then eventually it's like a punchline kind of thing. I don't know.
A prank is when both people are laughing at the end, you know, which as opposed to some people think a prank is when you kind of do something mean to somebody else and then you laugh at them. And I'm like, I wish there was less of that, because I do see that occasionally. But I think when you do something where you mislead someone and then when they figure it out, they're laughing, that's awesome.
Yeah, it's just like an elaborate like thing that they're like trying to get you to figure out, and then when you figure it out, you're like, oh, nice.
right.
That's so funny.
And the thing that I enjoy, like, you know, gifting is a huge part of the culture, and it expresses itself in so many ways. I think when you first learn about gifting, you think of it as it's gifting items. You know, your gift, like, oh, I brought bracelets to give away. And then you start to think like, well, what is something that I could make? And then you're like, okay, I made these medallions. Then you give that away. But I think the deeper part of gifting is, how can I make someone's experience better? Can I make your moment better, your day better, your life better? And that doesn't necessarily mean giving you something. It could mean helping you with a task that you're in the middle of. It could mean listening. It could mean anticipating something. It could mean, oh, you know what? Thank you for this food. Could I help you with dishes? There's all these different ways that you can gift. And for me, I think I love to figure out how I can make gifting into like performance, you know, like, so, okay, like I like to give away pins. And so instead of just saying, hey, do you want a pin? Or can I give you a pin? I have a bag of them and I go clang, 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 clang. And I walk in like, are you willing to accept the guidance of the Oracle? And they go, oh, of course. You're like, and like, okay, like, okay, think of something, you know, and then reach in and go, ah, the Oracle wants you to know this. You know, so it's like, it's having fun with performance and silliness and making an experience, you know, practicing immediacy and having this like moment together with someone, that to me, that's the most fun, is to just kind of like to surrender to a moment and let that a gifting experience be like improv. Yeah. That's my, I love that.
Yeah. Yeah. Helping is a big one. That's, I love Build Week so much. Like, I almost have more fun at Build Week than the actual event. And yeah, just being silly, being funny, coming up with like things on the spot and like making people laugh. And you can just say anything you want as long as it's like funny and not like offensive, you know. Like, you can just make it up on the spot. So, and you know, I've had a lot of times when people would just like laugh at what I was saying and then like give me a patch or like give me a sticker. Mm-hmm. You know, they're like, you made me laugh, here's like the thing.
The thing too about like you said, you had as much help during Build Week, and to me that was a revolutionary awareness of how much joy I could get from giving, from helping. You know, that there was a part of me growing up that always thought that charity or service was things you did almost as kind of like to pay back your privilege. Like, I have so much, so I'm going to go work in a soup kitchen because I owe it to the system that's been so good to me. But then at Burning Man, you start to learn that doing nice things, and it when you see your acts, your activities, your actions, your thoughts, your words, making someone's day better, it makes you feel better. You know, you're like, oh my gosh. So for me to get happier, I can make other people happier. And I think that that's something that when you really get it at Burning Man, it translates beautifully into the rest of the year. And you can find ways, whether it's just the way that you interact with your friends, or like about 15 years ago, I was really trying to figure out a way to do more gifting in the default world. And so with some local friends, we started a homeless charity. So once a month, we do this thing called First Saturdays, where we bring out food and donated clothes and care packs. We have a little like mini event once a month. And it's totally like a gifting practice. It's not like, oh, poor you. It's like, hey, do you want this? Hey, can we give you this? Because if you, like at Burning Man, there's so many people that are giving away stuff. You need like a megaphone. You're like, hey, come get our mojitos. Please, please have a snow cone. But if you can go to any place, any city in America and go to the downtown area, and there's people that'll be stoked to get some socks. So you can have that Burning Man gifting experience year round if you just kind of like keep that mindset. So that's been something that's been really helpful for me to stay in burner mentality year round, is stay in gifting mindset.
Yeah. So let's go ahead and pivot towards explaining the principles to people that have maybe not been there before. I know we've been talking about the things that we love so much about it, but we should explain it a little bit more, right?
All right. So, and to say, it's important to know too that so the 10 principles they govern Burning Man, but they're not rules. They're principles that are guidelines. And they did not begin with the event. And I think it was 2004, as Burning Man regionals were starting to grow, they realized that they needed some way to talk about what is Burning Man. You know, what makes a gathering a Burning Man gathering? And so Larry Harvey wrote up these 10 principles, which are not things, they weren't supposed to be directions of things that you should do. They were descriptions of what Burning Man was already doing. And they're also written in a way that sometimes they kind of are contradictory. So they're kind of a starting point for conversations as opposed to a rule book to like punish one another with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, there is like, I think they're genius. Larry Harvey, thanks, Larry.
Yeah, I do too. And it really, the thing that I love is it, if you are following the 10 principles, then you know that anything you do that stays within those principles can be productive. It's not going to be destructive. It's not, you know, if so, we talked about that pipeline of creativity. that anything that comes out is okay. You just got to kind of run it through the 10 principles. Like, oh, wait, is this messing with civic responsibility, which is one of our rules? So is this expression that I want to do, is that going to mess with my neighbors? Is that going to affect Burning Man's reputation with the community? Like, okay, so maybe this impulse I have to burn things down, okay, that's not following the 10 principles, so maybe I shouldn't do it. Or leave no trace is another one of the principles. So this outfit that I want to put together with this old ratty blanket that is shedding, like, okay, I'm not going to wear that because it doesn't follow the 10 principles. It violates this guideline that we want to leave this place better than we found it.
Yeah. So radical inclusion. Obviously, everybody is allowed to participate in Burning Man and nobody is left out. And that alone starts the whole love circle, love environment, because nobody feels like they are disincluded. And, you know, sometimes it does feel like you're alone at Burning Man sometimes. Mm-hmm. But I think you said one time in one of your things, like, if you walk 50 feet, you'll find a new family.
Occasionally people write to me and they're like, hey, you know, I'm introverted or I'm shy. Like, how am I going to do it Burning Man? And there's something about knowing that we have all come to this place with the idea of creating a community and that getting to know one another, you know, like a huge part of the gift of Burning Man is experiencing fellow human beings that are on this journey of shifting out of default world pressures into authentic expression. And so more so than anywhere else I've ever been, people are open to meeting new people. So that doesn't mean that everybody that you cross paths with is going to say, hey, come jump on the back of my bike. But if you sit down at a fire circle or you see people that are, you know, sitting on a couch and you sit down and say, how's it going? Or what was your day like? Most of the time, you're going to just be included in the conversation as you move forward.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I mean, a lot of people that haven't been before are like, I don't know, I'm very like intimidated by there's so many people. And I'm like, no, but they're all your friends, you know, like, yeah, the first principle is inclusion.
It takes place in a large expanse. So if you, in certain areas of the city, there's a lot of traffic and people are walking around, but you can also walk out into the desert and there's nobody around and you can, you know, there could be you and five people in an expanse around all these huge sculptures. And if you don't want to talk to anybody, you don't have to. Or if you want to, you know, I love the experience of just me and one other person are both kind of like at a sculpture. And then they say, what do you think this means? Or something like, you know, it's like, cool. Clearly I'm here to look at art. And yeah, I don't know. I think that it's a legitimate concern because there are lots of people, but there's so many ways that you can experience it with a lot of space as well.
Yeah. Yeah. That's kind of how I counter when someone's like, no, there's too many people. I was like, no, like you can just go out into the desert forever and like lay on an art piece and nobody will bother you for an hour. Probably. And that's especially,
I think that you made a good point though, that it can feel very alone there, you know, especially if you are like, sometimes it feels like everyone there is having the time of their life, you know, or there's maybe people partying in a way that you don't party, and it can feel very lonely to feel, I'm in this incredible place and, you know, I'm not connecting with people. And I would say that sometimes the challenges of Burning Man are as important as the joyful things. You know, mm-hmm. It's not a vacation. Those moments when you maybe can't find a feeling of community and instead decide to walk around and and then sit on a couch by yourself. I mean, that could lead to someone else sitting on by that couch and you meeting your new best friend. And I think you gotta accept that it is, it's not a 24/7 fun time festival. It is a challenging place that forces you to look at the parts of yourself that you probably could use a little reacquaintance with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, my most alone feelings are like when I'm trying to find like friends that I had like in the default world that came and maybe they're like across the city and I just really want to like meet up with these people. And then you like spend a whole day like, oh, they're asleep. Oh, they're out. And you're like, oh man, I just wasted like a whole day trying to find like friends that I knew that I wanted to meet up with here. And then you're like, man, I'm just biking around alone. But then eventually you give up and just like go to a bluegrass party or like there's a Taylor Swift dance party like right there. And you just, you know, you're like, all right, this is good.
I think that is the best advice for getting the most out of Burning Man is as soon as possible, let go of your expectations, you know, whether it's trying to find a friend or trying to find a vent or trying like there's so many amazing things there that if you're at something that you're not enjoying or you can't find something that you're looking for, kind of changing your viewpoint to, well, what is around me, will generally lead you to something that's interesting and worth your time. But it's hard sometimes to let go of the, I can't find like sometimes people are trying to find a certain DJ that's playing. To me, that seems like a really bad use of Burning Man time, to trying to find the one thing of music that you know you like. Like there's so much that you don't know. Why don't you let that happen? But it can be hard to surrender. And I think that's one of the huge lessons is just let go of what I think is supposed to happen and surrender to what is happening. Surrender to the next inspiration. And if I'm heading towards the thing that I'm supposed to go to and I see a parade to my left, like maybe join the parade. Maybe that's what you're supposed to do.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's why Burning Man is like really hard on the couples as well. Cause like one person wants to go do this thing. One person wants to do something else. And then you're like, when will I see you again? And you worry, you know? Yeah.
I have a YouTube video specifically like guides for couples. And the basics of it is, I think it's really important to establish in advance, some legitimate rules for your relationship. Like what would you consider to be playful activities with other people and what would you consider to be cheating? Like if grinding on someone on the dance floor is cheating, you guys need to talk about that in advance. And the other thing is scheduling date time and solo time. You know, if you try to be a couple the entire event, you'll be frustrated when the other one is leaving or when you want to do something that they don't. But if you have, on Tuesday and Thursday, we're going to have independence days and explore on our own. And on Monday and Friday, we're going to have date days. And we're going to make sure that we wait for each other and do things together. And splitting your time like that is, I think, critical so that you don't resent the other person. But so much of what Burning Man's magic is that you start to just listen to what is guiding you. What should I do next? I don't know what feels right. And if you are in your head too much about what your partner wants you to do, you can't access that deep inner compass and it can lead to resentment.
Yeah, no, totally. I made the mistake of bringing a sort of rocky girlfriend to the mud burn and I will never do that again. That's about all I'll say about that one. Gifting, that's your favorite one. Sure, you have a lot to say about that one. So
yeah, and I kind of mentioned like gifting it to me changes the world because when you start to realize that your target zone for making yourself happy is more than just yourself, but includes everyone in the world, it just changes the way that you go through life. And I think that if everyone got that, it would just be such a much more. The world will be more like Burning Man, and it would be. I think we'd all benefit from that. And then I mentioned a little bit about like The other one that's, I think, huge, kind of at the anchor of all of it to me, is radical self-expression. That idea of if it's authentic, then we're going to celebrate that. And that leads, I think, to all the other things that you do at Burning Man. When you have the freedom to really listen to impulses, the permission as opposed to the shoulds, that's also changes your life.
Yeah. And in your TED Talks, you talked about how your grandpa gave you gifts to give other people. I thought that was pretty wild. Could you explain that a little?
Yeah. I mean, like, he... Like there's an organization that I still use quite a bit, is like heifer.org. And so my grandpa used to, instead of giving me a toy or something, he would give me a certificate that said, a goat has been purchased for a family in Africa on your behalf. So this goat will now have milk, or give this family milk, you know, indefinitely. And, you know, as a kid, I had a hard time appreciating that. But once I learned about gifting, I was like, oh my gosh, this is a gifting gift. He's hoping that I feel the joy of another person's joy, knowing that that can be a way deeper feeling than what a plastic toy would have given me. And I think that, you know, that if you've ever experienced that yourself, like if you on a whim bought the groceries for the person in front of you who didn't have enough money, you know, and you go, you know what, I'll cover it. I got $8. There's no way you can spend $8 on yourself that is going to make you feel that good and is going to stick with you that it does when you help someone else with $8. And it's just, we don't live in that headspace of gifting. So we often just don't even see those opportunities when they occur, which is why Burning Man and just kind of, that's why I do a morning broadcast every day. It's like, let's try to just like set our brains so we're looking around and trying to stay aware of those gifting opportunities. Because if one comes and you, oh, I can give a ride to my friend to the airport, you know, or, oh, I can buy this extra little donut for the kid who can only afford one. You're like, those things feel awesome, but you have to be ready for them when they happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's like bringing it back into the world. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think the other benefit of doing it in the default world is that it surprises people. And almost like people are like, you're allowed to do that? That's why you see those rippling of people buying for the person behind them at Starbucks. It's like you kind of break this rule that everyone take care of yourself. Like, oh, wait. Oh, well, okay. Let me do something nice for the person behind me. Okay. Let me try. And it just ripples through.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you think that would ever work well in like a larger sense? Like, we obviously, people bring way too many things to Burning Man to give away. Do you think that could ever like ripple into like a larger society? I mean, you know, it's a social experiment of an alternative society, but do you think there's any chance that it would ever become a larger society?
Yeah. I mean, I think they're a common frustration is like, why can't we live this way year round? You know, and I think that the challenges are, as you said, when you prepare for Burning Man, you acquire resources, extra resources, so that you can give them away. And for most people, they don't have the abundance to do that always, unless the entire world is doing it too. And any system, when it gets, you know, to a certain point, it's difficult for people not to take advantage of others. So I don't think we're going to have a gifting based economy on a national level. I do think that we are seeing, like, if you see those there's like free, or like, I can't remember what they're called, but like on, there's Facebook groups where you just post, hey, I've got this thing for free. Now, somebody could have tried to sell it. They probably could have made a few bucks, but they know that they'll feel good giving it to someone else. And so there's these whole little communities of giving to one another, I think, that are happening and hopefully are growing. But there's also the challenge that it takes a lot of people working together to make something like that work. And it takes very few people being bad actors to sabotage things, unfortunately.
Yeah, I mean, we saw that this year with all the bikes being stolen and everything like that. I guess there were whole camps that were stealing bikes and like shipping them out to Fresno or something.
The thing that I think that is important to remember is because people often you have an experience and you say, why can't the world be like this? And that is going to frustrate you. But what the better route of thinking is, how can I be the same person? How can I be like that year round? And it doesn't mean that the world is going to meet you in the same way. It doesn't mean that, like, if you give gifts to everyone all day long at Burning Man, you're going to have people going, yay, oh, thank you, I've got something for you, yay. And so it feels amazing. But you can still do that in the default world. You're just not going to get the same responses. But I think that is where the really important work is. I think that, in fact, if you are lucky enough to have an experience, whether that is at Burning Man or psychedelics or anything that is where you are shown a part of yourself free from the societal binds, you almost have a responsibility, because of the rarity of that gift, to try to do it in the default world. And it's way harder. And there are going to be people that are going to roll their eyes. There are people that are going to kind of judge you. But that's the task. That's what makes it something more than just like frivolous fun and partying. It's like you are enrolled as a love warrior, and it's hard. But there's so many people out there that are hungry for some excuse, some opportunity, that they're not a burner. But when they see a neighbor that's like, hey, I made cupcakes, they're like, we can do that? We can be that kind of friendliness? And I think that they're a burner in some way. They're never going to go to Black Rock City, but they want to have a community that is more familial, that is more gifting, more radically self-expressive. And so when you can be that example in the world, you can be this like missionary, a permissionary. You can be the ambassador. And so I think that's how you can avoid the crushing of like, the world sucks. You're like, okay, well, I am going to work hard to not suck, and I'm going to see if that can create ripples in the world.
So good. Yeah. Yeah. Just like little things, like, hey, how are you doing this morning? Like, or checking in on friends, even just like a small text, like, hi, how are you doing? You know, that can like brighten up somebody's entire day. You know,
you're preaching. That's exactly right. I think that people often think that they know that they want to be good people. And so once they get, you know, their resource in order, and once they, you know, get their weight under control, once they get all the things done, then they're going to go start a charity and do something good. You're like, you can do good every day right now. It's little things. Just smile at your neighbor. Just as you say, send, hey, I'm thinking about you, to a friend. Like that's it. That's the shift from like, I'm a drone in the world following the rules, to I'm a love ambassador. And then you just start to find more and more opportunities to do that.
Yeah. So a lot of people think that Burning Man is a huge drug party and there's no spiritual sense in it. What would you say to the people that would want to go, that maybe don't want to be involved in all the drugs? I mean, there's something to be said about drugs enhance your love experience, but a lot of people don't really want to be involved in that sort of thing.
Like, I think it's a valid question.
I tend to be like more into the what is the philosophy behind everything we're doing here? Like, what's the takeaways for me in my soul as a, and what can I learn? And like, what's the spirituality part? And it's not, so I've never like voluntarily done psychedelics at Burning Man because I don't think it's too intense for me like already. Though I am like an advocate for psychedelics and I've done them many, many times, like in my own things, like to figure out things or just to feel more alive and get a different perspective. But I just think it's too intense. There's too many things going on. And you know, I tend to drink alcohol because it's everywhere. And yeah, but what would you say to people that like don't want to participate in like the craziness of it. And like, yeah.
I mean, I think that is a legitimate question, because by the nature of all these things we've been talking about, it promotes freedom. And when you have a place that promotes total freedom, a lot of people are going to party. They're going to push their limits in different ways. And one of those limits is through drugs and alcohol. But it is good to remember that Black Rock City is a city, and that there are parts of the city that are quite like bars or like nightclubs. And there are parts of the city that are like yoga classes or like classrooms or like universities, coffee shops. And so the ways that people are expressing their freedom are very varied. Some of it is dramatic, you know, like playing with fire and blowing things up. But it's the spiritual part is what happens to each of us when we are in that really fertile landscape of allowing. And so if where we go to that place is not of partying, great. It is still a fertile place for us to have the conversations, to have the introspection, to listen to the lecture, to dance ecstatically. It's the path of our own journey of acceptance and allowing our authentic selves is beautiful and necessary, with or without, you know, chemical aids. Some people find it a lot easier with chemical aids, which is why you see that. But if you don't need that, or you don't want that, it's still a gorgeous place with tons of people that are doing it just like you are.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like explosion overload anyway. So, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, my personal habits were, I used to party quite a bit at Burning Man, and now I'm no longer using alcohol or intoxicants. And so it has changed the way that I experience Burning Man.
That's good to hear, because I mean, I pretty much need to like do alcohol pretty much, because it's just everywhere and it's like a social lubricant for me. I can like be more open with people and like talk better. Otherwise I'm just kind of like a little shy person that's like, no. So I need that sort of thing at the Burn to make my experience better. But that's cool to know that you're sober, and you know, maybe my fifth or sixth burn I'll be like sober the whole time and see how it goes. Love that. Also, Pink Heart, how did you start that? Obviously, it's on Esplanade. It's like one of the coolest things. I, way before I knew who you were, I was like sitting on your couches out there.
Oh, awesome.
And talking to people. So what happened there? Like, how'd you get into that?
So, I mean, the cool thing about Burning Man is that it's a duocracy, you know? So if you start a sentence with, Burning Man should have ... then you own the rest of that sentence. In fact, someone told me that was a Larry Harvey quote, that if you start a sentence that says Burning Man should ... you're responsible for whatever comes next. You know, so one of the things that I loved about Burning Man is like my favorite thing was meeting people and talking to people. And often late at night, the most people were hanging out where the loud music and the blinky lights were. And I would go, and then I'd be like, pom, pom, pom. I'd be like, so where are you from? What? So where are you camping? What? You know, and I just wanted a place where we could have like drop in with people. The meeting other people was my favorite part about the burn. So I started to visualize what was a place that would feel safe. And then sort of think, what other things that the city needs? Like, it's so easy to get lost. So like, what if we made like a bright pink beacon that was day or night you could use to find your way. So it was designed to be an esplanade camp, so you could find your way home day or night, use it as a guide. So the idea is to be a lighthouse for body, mind, spirit. So if you're physically lost, it's got the beacon. If you're dehydrated, your body is out of whack, we've got ice water. And then if your spirit or you're mentally kind of a little lost or your mind's blown, we've got the pink fur couches. So you could sit down, look out over the city and meet people and talk and just kind of get grounded. And so then it kind of developed a little bit of a vibe of a safe place, a place where it was people would be friendly, people would take care of you. And lots of love, lots of love and care. And we also serve vegan ice cream for a couple of days. So it's the vegan ice cream with gluten-free cones, so it can be radically inclusive treats for people. That was the initial vision. Then more and more people started adding their ideas and their gifts to it, and it's been beautiful to watch it grow into something beyond me, and to see people who like met their partner there, and then they got engaged the next year, and then they got married there the year after that, and to see it become a part of people's burn stories. I actually did not camp there this year, so part of my burn story was witnessing this beautiful thing that I helped create, and to see it continue thriving and growing with my energy not a part of it this year. So it was really special.
Yeah, that's interesting. I do love the fact that like there's a place where you can like hang out without all the like boom 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 all the time.
We spent a lot of energy in like what's the right amount of lighting so that you can see people but it's not too bright and it's not blinky. It's like how can we make like calm pink lights, pink fur couches, just nice, easy.
Yeah, nice, like a little respite from all the chaos that's always going on.
Exactly.
There. Yeah. Yeah, like you touched on something I'm always like really annoyed by, like in a party situation, like your friend is like there and like you can't talk to them at all. You're just like yelling at them and like, nope, no idea. So we're like mute communicating in this party thing. And yeah.
Have you ever done a silent disco?
Yes, I have.
Because you can be like grooving and then you just take them off and you can have a normal conversation with somebody, which is kind of fun.
Yeah. And it doesn't upset the neighbors.
Yeah, exactly.
So we're at about 56 minutes. Do you want to keep talking or anything else?
I would. Why don't we roll it to the come to an end of part one?
What do you mean? Like?
Oh, I just mean like we'll talk again another time. But I think this conversation should come to a close.
Okay. Cool. Well, thank you so much, Halcyon. So good to talk to you.
Yeah, and it's a treat to feel your excitement and your energy. You said you've been 3 years to the burn?
Yeah, and this year was my first year at the box office. So,
what was that like?
It was wild, really fun. just the characters that come up to buy last minute tickets, or maybe they forgot their ticket or lost their ticket, or. They had like some unrequited love story and they needed to get in or just they came way too fucked up already. And you're like, hey guy. I spent a lot of the time just juggling out in front, and like having fun with people and then like figuring out problems.
An awesome idea or I think suggestion is like finding a way to volunteer that puts you like gives you an excuse to talk to people. It really is it's a great way to have interactivity and meet people. If you might feel like it's too much to sit down and finding a way to volunteer is a great way to feel like you're a part of the city.
Yeah. And also they take care of you. You know, no camp dues with the org camps, which is nice.
Oh, nice.
They have like private portos, showers, nice space, like charging stations. And it's like in a quiet part of the city, kind of near Center Camp, which I really loved. So I can like kind of escape and like go to my own little like corner of the world and not have like the music next to me or anything like that. Which is cool. Awesome. And also, I think, hot take, I think there should be fire performances at the box office or like in front of it. I don't know. I think it'd be great. Or like juggling performances or something like that.
I think that's an awesome idea because there's people in line, right?
Yeah. I mean, not so much. We like really went through them this year. But like there's people that are arriving to Burning Man and they're like, oh no, they're like, there's so much anticipation and, you know, not to say like that the workers are a little tired, but they're a little tired and like, they're not as jolly as possible. I mean, I'm one of those people that maybe not be as jolly, but, if we had like some jugglers or some like fire dancing, like out in front, like when people first get into the gate at the box office, I think that would be cool. And
that's a cool idea. I agree. The entrance process could use some brainstorming. You know,
I could use a little more.
By the time I'm at the greeters, I'm often like, I appreciate you, but I'm done. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, especially like thinking about virgins that's never been there before. Like, you know, we know that once you get in to Burning Man, it's going to blow your mind immediately. Like once you see the greeters and like you're actually in the city, you're like, okay, got it. But then like, you know, these people have been waiting for sometimes 12 hours. Like my first burn, I was like overnight waiting.
Ooh.
And like, yeah. And then like you get to the box office and you're like a little shaken up and you're a little like frustrated. We could have like some performers out there. And I mean, I will be one of them. I'm a juggler. So
they're sweet.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. You're going to lead the charge.
Michelle. Okay. Thanks, Halcyon.
Awesome to talk with you. Have a beautiful day.
You too.